60 Songs That Explain the 90s are back and in their final stretch. The Ringer's music critic Rob Harvilla curates and explores 60 iconic songs from the 90s that define the decade. Rob is joined by a variety of guests to break it all down as they turn back the clock. Check out 60 Songs That Explain the 90s exclusively on Spotify.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 billion, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
Hello, and welcome to the Ringer Prestige TV show. It's the Succession Precap. MCs act like they don't know. It's Chris Ryan with Waz. We're back after a Thanksgiving break. We're here to get you ready for the penultimate episode of Succession this season and to talk a little bit about what we saw at Kendall's birthday. And I didn't get Waz's take on picking a president or also competitive diner food eating. Waz, what's going on?
Hey, man, I'm just trying to pod the demons out. That's it. That's all I'm doing out here, man.
Are you are you anti-fragile at this point? Are you full nut?
I'm all of it. It's just, you know, we program bangers here strictly at the Ringer. So we just trying to keep the bangers consistent.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about first, actually, is like, I don't want to like at all put a ceiling on where you can go professionally, because like, honestly, you're a rocket ship. I'm just trying to grab onto the back. But I do feel like if maybe you wanted to dial it down and be a little bit less forward facing, like Kendall's rap curator is an interesting gig for you. And frankly, for me, like either one of us, I feel like could bring a lot to the table there.
It's so easy. That would be such an easy ass job. Cause Kendall's vague or general interest in Black culture, for lack of a better way to phrase it, is so hilarious. And it's my favorite detail about the character. It's like, he's all of these things, and he's the type of guy who at a party is like, yeah, I love rap, but only from the 90s, though.
Yeah.
He's one of those white dudes, right? Like, yeah, like, I only like the golden era stuff. Like, so it'd be so easy to program a bunch of, you know, boot camp click and then obviously Tribe. This guy's listening to a ton of Tribe.
He just grabs the biggest DJ Premier playlist he can find and lets it ride. What do you think is the most contemporary rap Ken gets into? Do you think he had a Gucci Mane phase? Like, kind of like for a second there, people
I think his most contemporary is Eminem. Because you can't call yourself a good white person who likes rap and not be into Eminem. You're bad at being a white rap fan if you're not at least into the earlier M, right? Like, obviously, postmodern M, late period M, you know, I'm not afraid. I don't think we need to do that.
I don't think Kendall does that. No, Kendall is definitely like, if it came out of D&D Studios, it's for Kendall.
It's for Kendall.
100%. I was kind of thinking like I could see Kendall being into Cole. You know what I mean? Like at this
sure.
stage.
Yeah. Cole and Kendrick. Yeah. The projection of golden era raps for sure. That's very spot on actually on your part.
And I was trying to think like, does Cole get an invite to the 40th? I definitely think the email got sent. I don't know if he attends, but it just feels like something where it would be like, yeah, man, like Cole's coming. Kendrick, TDE's coming.
Cole got the invite. However, Q-Tip's actually DJing the event.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's what's really happening over there.
I could see Q-Tip. I could see Questlove on the decks.
Yes, 100%.
Do you think you would have gone had you been in New York and you'd been and somebody was like, "We're gonna go through Kendall's. We're gonna go to the treehouse."
Would I have gone? I would have been the first person there.
Last one.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
The open bar, the hors d'oeuvres, the people watching. Yeah. I mean, are you shitting me? I would have been there ASAP-ly.
The birth canal tunnel? Yeah, right.
Of course. You know, that tunnel actually looks like the artwork for Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop show. You don't remember that? Like, it was like vagina wall artwork.
I don't think Gwyneth I ever saw that.
Google that.
Okay.
You'll be happy that you
I'll
did.
Save it for after the pod. let's talk a little bit, just generally speaking, how have you felt about the last two episodes and where the season is headed?
I love it. I hate to sound like such a fanboy. I just really feel like they're clicking on all cylinders. And this episode in particular, I think this is the most gut-wrenching, messed up, saddest episode. Like, even more so than, you know, season one where Kendall, like, clearly lost because he helped kill a guy and his dad gets him out of it, right? But, you know, at least, like, in that, as messed up as it is, like, your dad is keeping you out of prison.
That's true.
Like, sure, you don't get to be the CEO of the company, but he's keeping you out of the pokey, bro.
Right. There's some paternal really, love there in some...
Yeah, like, that's not really that messed up. Like, this is just, like, that. What happens at the end of this episode... I was just like, wow, this is tough to watch. Holy smokes.
Yeah, and it seems like it comes for all of them, right? Like, Ken obviously is shattered by the end of this past episode. Every character gets a moment where you're just like, oh, I feel like so awkward for you. Like, Shiv's dancing. I think Roman's pretty successful attempt at, like, public ridicule and bullying of his brother still does. You're still like, Jesus Christ, is that really who you are? Although I guess in the previous episode when he's just like trying to usher in a state of fascism to the United States, we're like, yeah, that is who he is. But yeah, nobody really comes off well. Nobody really enjoys themselves at this party.
Yeah, it's interesting the way they set it up. It's like, all right, is this going to be one of those fun, kooky type of things the way Tom's bachelor party was, right? Where, like, obviously our favorite episode from season one with the coke and the molly and the sex club of it all, and which, I don't know, might say something about me and Chris that we care not to admit on this pod.
We like to socialize.
That's it. Regular stuff. The way this episode unfolded, they kind of, you know, it was a sleight of hand where we thought, oh, are we going to do like a little funhouse type of situation the way we did in season one? And then it just slowly but surely starts unraveling, right? Where Tom is like, yo, why is everybody down? And Shiv's like, shut up. Like, stop letting people harsh and mellow. Like, you should be happy that you're staying out of the pokey, right? Like, it's just... the way they slowly unravel this thing, and I think a big theme of the episode too is just like envy and jealousy, right? You see the siblings being jealous of one another, but mainly freaking Roman in that spot, which I thought was so, like, as callous and as cold as it seemed, I feel what Roman is saying because the two of them have done everything they can to put themselves in the position that Roman has. And so, like, this idea that he shouldn't be celebrating or gloating when they tried their hardest to screw him out of that spot, undermined him at every single turn so that they could be the ones in that position. Like, the idea that he wouldn't wave this in front of their faces, like, I kind of feel him. Not that I would personally do that to my brother or sister, but I kind of feel him, you know?
Yeah, and then Roman's, like, I guess his... adoption of like the rhetorical style of the like shitlord right, where it's just like everything is a joke and everybody's feelings are ridiculous and everything is kind of just like for laughs, is pretty effective when you're doing like sibling rivalry stuff because you can just constantly be like, this isn't real. This is all funny. I kind of did wonder whether or not he wanted Kendall to take a shot at him, you know, because like whether that would be because he has some sort of sadomasochistic streak or whether it would just be so bad for Kendall to to punch his brother in a public setting like that. I thought that that like hit me, like that bit where he was like trying to egg Kendall on into taking a swing at him was really fascinating.
Well, it's interesting that you used the like right wing sort of trollish behavior online. And that's what that is, mm-hmm. right? Like that's where the original term from troll comes from. It's like a bunch of people who are doing something solely for reaction. Like that, all he wants is a reaction. Like that, getting punched by Kendall would have made him bust a nut, 100%, yeah. right? Because like all he wants is to see people get pissed, get sad, get angry. Right. He wants to elicit emotions from people. So yeah, he 100% wanted him to punch him. That would have made him feel incredible because again, he's riding this euphoric high of like, I'm doing it. I'm doing the thing. I'm the number two. I'm the next in line. Everybody loves me. He calls himself the world's greatest businessman. Like sort of tongue in cheek, but not really. You know, like he's riding an emotional high. And he's like, fuck you guys, because I know for a fact, if you guys were in my position, you'd be doing the same thing. Because just think about the self-satisfaction of Shiv. Like, thanks. You should be thanking me for saving the company, Dad.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Kendall
being like.
That's
a good Shiv imitation.
or when Kendall's like, yeah, you guys stole my idea. You know, like that's all they do. They take credit. They yeah. gloat whenever they have the smallest wins. So this tracks what Roman is doing.
Yeah. Roman is essentially like the manifestation of I'm not mad. I'm actually laughing. You know, like and it's interesting that the last two episodes in each case, I think both Shiv and other members of the family have wanted to kind of horn in and be like, okay, well, let me now, I'll finish things. I'll seal the deal. And Shiv even says to Roman when he's doing the Gojo stuff, she's like, well, we might need to finesse it. And he's just like, you're not finessing a guy who wants to take a piss on a mobile phone. Like the whole point is that these people who are now in charge of these huge companies or in charge of these political movements are actually more like me than they're like you. They're not refined. They're not business school. They're not law school. They're freaks. And I'm a freak and we communicate with each other.
Yep. Yeah, it's... You know, we didn't get people to hit me on the internet like, yo, are we going to talk about episode 6? Because, you know, I guess people understand that, like, I care about the politics of it all, real or imagined. Roman, again, his emotional intelligence and self-awareness is beyond everybody else's on the show. My favorite line from episode 6 was like, fascism, you know, as cool as fascism is, it's not. Right? Like, that's
so
such
fascism's
a brilliant,
cool, but it's not.
But it's not. Like, in a sense, like, honestly, Chris, like, go on your History Channel. Go on Netflix. World War II in color. Inglourious Bastards. But, like, all we do is fetishize this shit. So it is cool. We do want to consume it, but we want to be repulsed by it too, right? Like, so that's why that line is so genius to me. Because it's like, people are interested in this stuff, but it is pretty disgusting, right? And again, like, it's just Roman's understanding of people, especially these kinds of people, that is just, you know, incredible. Because it's like, look, this presidential candidate dude is just an unrestrained Roman, right? Like, it's just, you know, if Roman had no scruples, if Roman didn't have an actual family and an empire where they did have to, like, some pretense of image upkeep and image making, right? Like, if he didn't have to abide by any of that, that's who he would be, right? He'd be an unvarnished crazy person for sure. So he understands these guys. And I think that's what he's trying to explain to Shiv. Like, Shiv, like, you're not going to get in a room with Elon Musk and speak his language. Kanye does that. Okay? That's who hangs out with each other in freaking Wyoming. It's not Elon Musk and freaking Chelsea Clinton. No, those two things don't go together. And again, like, the show is just genius at depicting these angles.
What did you think in that episode 6, the moment where they're sort of at the end debating who to pick and Roman just like kind of bulldozes everybody as Shiv is just like, we can't actually be talking about this. And Roman just makes the like brass tacks case that this dude is just blockbuster that he's just a box office smash, and that essentially he's moving the Overton window, and that, you know, whatever he winds up becoming, like, this is ultimately really good for TV and really good for their channel.
It's that, and I think that Shiv doesn't fully understand that it is zero sum. There's a winner and there's a loser, and we're trying to pick a winner because that's all that matters, right? Because, like, there's no way to get half a win, to partially win, to be like, oh, we backed the nicest, most respectable guy in the race. However, we're out of the seat of power. That's not a win.
Right. She tries to flip them to the Democrats. She's just like, if none of these Republicans are working for us, we can go blue.
Which, by the way, is actually how it works, right? Like, you know, like, Goldman donated to Romney and Obama.
Right.
Okay, like, that's actually how our politics work. But yeah, no, like, Roman's just like, look, not only is this attracting a different audience for us, right? Like, the non-dick pill audience, right? It's attracting that. But, like, this dude can win with our help. Like, we're helping our product on one hand, and we're helping that product on the other, right? Like, which then gives us a seat at the table. It's like, it's kind of a no-brainer for them. They're not in the respectability game. They're not in the...
they're not trying to, like, win Peabody's. So, yeah, they're not trying to...
No,
yeah,
and,
right.
Like, and not even just that, like, you know, there was this idea I talk about all the time, right? Where, like, the WASP up in the Upper East and on Park Ave, like, the reason why they made the public parks and all of these things downtown for the Jews and the Irish in Lower Manhattan, because they understood there was, like, it was a public trust and it was a sort of social contract. It's like, yeah, the Jews in the mix, they're slovenly and lazy, but, like, let's at least make a park for them, right? Like, they intrinsically, they understood that. Our new overlords and overseers, no. They don't believe in any of that stuff. It's, to them, everything is zero sum.
No, it's consumer. Right? Like, they're only interested in the consumer end angle of it. They're not. They're not
nothing
trying to give
else.
Us, like, any kind of public space. You know, so the two sort of acquisitions that Roman makes over the course of these two episodes, one's Mencken, the amazingly played by Justin Kirk, who has this, like, real, like, YouTuber meets Peter Thiel, meets, like, a little bit of, almost like
Jordan,
like,
Peterson.
Yeah, like, kind of that, like, thought leadership, but then also, like, you know, has, like, a degree of, you know, a little bit of, like, edgy Richard Spencer-y energy to him. And then in the other episode, in the birthday episode, we meet Alexander Skarsgård's character, who plays this guy named Lucas, who's got this company Gojo, I'm assuming it's something like Twitch. It's some sort of like streaming community kind of thing. It seems to be that, like, they want to buy the tech that is Gojo and then put their content library on it. So there's a sort of tech versus content marriage. I've been fascinated watching, like, over the years, the seasons, the kids try to mold the company into their own image, whether it's Kendall trying to be like, this should be a social justice warrior kind of place that, like, atones for its sins, versus Roman, who's just like, fuck that. Like, we're going to the moon in the same direction that we've been going this whole time.
Yeah. As far as, like, I don't think the show is really concerned about what Gojo actually is. It's just, you need to know that this nouveau riche company is something they want to get into, because it will help them, right? Like, that's all we kind of want to know. And again, like, these newly rich people, these people who don't come from the school of Logan, who, by the way, like, Logan's always kind of right. You know, like, it's beneath him to go grovel to this tech bro. It really is. Like, bro, I got my money way before you. No matter how this pans out, I'll be filthy rich and filthy, like, richer than you. And, like, I've done more than you in more different fields. Like, bro, I could send my little spalpeen, okay? Like, he'll go over there and grovel towards you. This is beneath me. So, like, I just think Roman just understands the sort of the internet of it all,
yeah.
right? Like he speaks that muscular language of the internet. And Logan is like, that's not my shit. These disrespectful dudes can't even come to my office and just have a normal meeting.
Right.
Like it's really not his thing.
Yeah. Like Roman, you know? Like is like, just assume everyone kind of has low grade Asperger's and you're like, you know, it's not like that's not meant to be an offense that he didn't show up. He's just not showing up because he's been looking at his phone right. for 17 right. hours.
Yep.
I want to ask you before we go into like a kind of not predictive mode, but just at least talking a little bit about the last two episodes, the upcoming two episodes. I wanted to ask you quickly about Naomi. Naomi doesn't get a ton of screen time this season, but she does pop back up at the 40th birthday. And I thought that they had like a crucial little scene. It'd be interesting to see if it winds up playing out over the next couple of episodes where in a rather hostile gesture, Roman and Logan make a buyout offer to Kendall for his shares of Waystar, which apparently amounts to about $2 billion. And Naomi seems to be encouraging Kendall to take it. Now, did you read that scene as she wants this guy to get free of this family and just kind of like come, just take the $2 billion, set up a foundation, buy the Atlantic, do whatever he's going to do, and live life with her? Or do you think that she has some sort of ulterior motive involved here in some capacity? Like, how do you feel about her? And I also wanted to ask you about the watch scene.
So it's obvious to me that she's independently wealthy.
Yeah, but she's a Pierce. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, it's not like she needs Kendall's money or wealth. I think it's just, she's supposed to be our avatar in that scene and just saying the obvious, just like, wait, so like they just offered you $2 billion to never have to deal with any of this toxicity ever again, and you're thinking about not doing it? I mean, I don't know about you, Chris, but like, and I've had very few toxic situations in my life. I've been blessed that way. But in the few that I have, if somebody was like, here's $2 billion to get away from it.
Fuck off.
It seems obvious that that's something to do. And, you know, I think that scene serves a dual purpose of being like, there are no real stakes for these people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Ken completely losing, egg on his face, falling flat, being a complete failure in his endeavors, ends in him getting a $2 billion check.
Yeah, but you can tell that for all of these people, the only thing that matters is their relevance in relationship to the son that is Logan and the son that is being in charge right. of his company. Because
right.
he's not happy at this party where he's essentially created the Magic Kingdom for all 40-year-old recovering backpackers. And he's looking at a $2 billion check, and the only thing he can come up with is like this fantasy land stuff about like buying the LA Times and putting like his dad on the cover every day. It's like he isn't anything if he's not Kendall Roy, heir to the throne. Just like Shiv isn't anything if she's like, I'm right. fourth in command. Like, what is that? Like, if I'm not on the board, if I work for right. Roman while he's like ushering in fascism, it's yeah, you're right. There is no consequences, but there's really no price tag on what they want.
100%. And I think, like I said, that scene does the dual purpose of being like, yo, this is what the consequence is. And also, like, this girl is encouraging him to do what's best for him. You know, that's why I don't think she's some, like, Trojan horse sneak attack. It's like she's encouraging him to do the best, what so obviously would be the best for his mental health and his psyche, you know. But obviously, Kendall will never want to quit these people. He can't.
Well, he's, I mean, addicted. Yeah, for the sake of the show, he can't really either. I don't think this is the kind of show where it's like, here's Kendall
who's in
like an
obviously
other show.
Obviously, that's not
yeah.
That's not on the table.
But it does
for
go,
sure.
It goes towards the larger conversation that's been happening about this show, which is kind of like, well, what was this season about? You know, like where I see now you make that face, and that's interesting because like I think you probably are like, why would you watch this show for that reason, right?
I mean, what is this season yeah. about? Like, look, again, if you don't watch this show and think about the circumstances of our own reality here in this country, I don't know what to tell you, right? Like the show, like there was a scene where somebody asked Siobhan, because, you know, rich people always make a big show about their philanthropy.
Yes.
I'm a philanthropist.
Yes.
I don't need to be taxed. I don't need the government to pick what I do with my money because I'm so generous in philanthropy. And remember they asked Shiv, like, do you even know, like, the event that she showed up to? She's like, do you even know what it's called or what it's for?
Right.
Right? And this episode is like, this is what they do with their money. This is what they do. This is what the money goes towards. This is what, like, you know, trickle down is. This is what it's trickling down to, right, y'all. Like, this is what the show is explaining to you guys. Like, the ultra wealthy, it's not that they're these hyper competent people. And not only are they not hyper competent, they're fucking ghouls and monsters. That's the point of the season. I don't know. Maybe I'm watching the
different show.
You're
absolutely right. No, you know what it is? It's the difference between like what you're taking from it thematically and intellectually versus what you're taking from it dramatically. So dramatically speaking, I think we've been conditioned by Succession over the last two seasons to expect some sort of narrative movement one way or the other. And usually in somewhat something of a twist, like the first season had the number one boy kind of come now you're mine, like I own you because you killed a guy. The second season had Kendall going to the press conference. The third season, I think we've gotten to this point and I'm like, I actually have like a clearer picture. It's given me more to think about, more to laugh about, more to like really ponder in terms of like this portrait of these fucked up people. But I don't know like what Gojo is and whether buying it is a good idea or a bad idea or how it can be like kind of weaponized for one side or the other. So in terms of those things, I think I understand why people are like sort of questioning that. I don't know where it goes for the next two episodes. I think the next one is obviously about their mother's wedding. So we get another wedding, which is dope. But yeah, I'm not sure. Like to me, it's like I feel like the sixth episode especially was so eye-opening and so like amazing. Like that to me is like enough of a gift that I don't need to find out that Tom's been wearing a wire.
Bruh, I don't know what to tell plot fiends. Like, I'm sorry. Like, does it...
We're post-plot on this podcast.
They're showing you... Like, they're showing you without telling you. The freaking... The feds getting off of their backs is just 30 seconds and we're done with it.
Right.
But that's how things work for
these
people.
Think about what we were watching now. Think about what we're watching now over the last 4 years. Yeah.
That's how things go for them. Like Mike Flynn commits all of these crimes or whatever before Trump's out of office. Your pardon, bro. That never happened. You know what I'm saying? Like that's how our system works for these specific people. Like the show is explaining to you that like, the way things work, these things that you think are going to take them down never will. That shoe is not going to drop. Is this a spoiler alert? The actual drama is the family stuff. Is like, because as repulsive as all these people are, like I found myself feeling bad for Kendall.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I felt bad what they did to him at the party. I felt bad when you asked Shiv. So, like, you didn't come to my party, like, to see me at all. Like, that was none of your motivation.
You were just using it to get to this guy. Yeah.
Like, I felt bad about that. That's where they're delivering the stakes and the drama, like, the plot, like, the shareholder and Adrian Brody and voting them off, like, the show is explaining to you that that shit is beside the point.
Right.
I think they're telling you a story about our overseers, man. And if you don't understand that, I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know what to tell you should be the tagline for this podcast. I can't think of a better place to end. We'll be back next Friday getting into the finale. Unbelievably, we're coming up on the end of the season. So Sunday is the penultimate episode. Waz and I will be back to preview the finale next week. Thanks to John Kerma for producing us this week. Waz, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, just looking forward to the three P's, man. Privacy, pussy, and pasta. That's it. That's all I
knew you were going to work it in.
These days. The three P's.
Peace out, everybody.
Later.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.